Well, hello. Good afternoon. Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Scotty Hertz, joining you once again from the National Historic Site that is the Hertz Bunker in Guelph, Ontario, Canada. And joining me from wherever he is these days is Adam Not a Cat Donaldson. Adam, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm not a cat. I'm not a cat.
That's good to know. people, I guess, can't see the filters that we have on, which are, this is a no-filter, no, it's not a completely no-filter show, but all I heard in my voice in my head was the voice of Hank Hill when this guy was talking, but, can you hear me, Judge? Anyway, we could talk about the cat filters all day, but we have, like, a ton of other things to discuss today, as usual. In the second half, we're going to talk a bit about the India farmer strike, which is shaping up to be one of the largest strikes in the history of the world, just in terms of sheer numbers. We'll get to that. Prior to that, we're going to talk about Trump. Impeachment 2, Electric Boogaloo. What is going on in this case? It's been running all day, and again, we'll break that down a bit. But before the break, we're going to discuss the possibilities of the Ontario election gearing up, heating up. Considering it's not for another year and change yet, it's interesting where that is going. A little bit of focus, particularly on the NDP, but we'll see where that goes. But off the top, Adam, and I just heard, I guess this is sort of a breaking story for some, those that have not heard, that March break is going to move to an April break for the first time, possibly in history, delayed until the 12th of April, the government has decided. So I guess April break used to be Easter. So there will be Easter weekend. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the students have Easter Monday anymore. Is that something a bit archaic? It's definitely gone from a lot of levels. And then a week after will be April break to supposedly slow the spread. The quote that I heard, again, this is just before airtime, was that they want to move it because, and the quote is, "Congregation is a key method of spread." What is school if it isn't congregation? Like, I don't know. I'm having trouble with the signals here, Adam, as to what exactly they are trying to say.
I mean, that is basically what they are saying. I think is that at least that was the gist I got from Lecce. Well, the press release they sent out for Lecce's announcement is that, yeah, it's, you know, we let everybody out of school before Christmas, and then cases shot way the heck up. So, you know what? We can't possibly guarantee that that's not going to happen at March break again. It seemed to be completely tenured to the fact that, you know, a lot of the same factors that were in place during Christmas, the Christmas break, were in place, you know, in the weeks. I mean, and this, I guess, goes to the larger fact of, and this has kind of been on a side note today, that there's kind of a rising chorus of people who are saying, hey, don't reopen most of the province next week. It's like super dangerous. Like, we've finally gotten this under control, under control maybe a bit much, but I mean, it's certainly not 3,000 cases a day. It's now around 1,000-1,500 cases today, which is tremendous progress given where we were like this time last month. And yeah, so it just sounds really kind of silly. And because on the one hand, they're saying, well, it's, you know, school's one of the safest places you can be in the pandemic. And it's like, well, on the other hand, we can't take a break from school because you are immediately going to go run out and start hanging out with everybody and things. And it's putting an inordinate amount of, I think, stress on an already stressful situation in schools. And that was reflected because you have to get teachers really, really mad if you are going to see all four teachers unions team up for a joint statement on the matter. And that's what they did this afternoon, is that all four teachers unions issued a joint statement after the announcement saying this is I mean, to break like a 500-word press release down succinctly, it was basically this is BS. So,
yeah, and it was for probably, the record. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, for the record, there is still an Easter Monday. I'm looking at the Upper Grand District School Board calendar now.
Yeah, they've kept some things. Like, I don't know if they have Remembrance Day as well, but yeah, there are holidays that exist there that do not exist for a lot of the province, actually most of the province. But anyway, holidays, holiday. And maybe in throwing this out there, they're trying to say, don't book the classic March break period. I don't know if anybody's offering specials. I don't know if anybody's flying anywhere, or they'll have to stay in a hotel when they come back for 2 weeks. So I just under the impression that compared to last year, when people were told to go on their March break, this year it's like, no, don't go on your March break. You're going to get an April break, and don't get your hopes up. But again, one of the newer wrinkles this year is the variants, and it would seem that it has now been discovered. It is being discovered everywhere. I think we could probably go on the assumption that it is everywhere, but there's been a confirmed case of a variant. I don't know which one in Guelph, our health district, right? Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph. So, which are supposedly spread really quickly and are more severe. So that, you know, it's getting amped up.
The UK variant.
The UK variant, the Kent variant, as they call it in the UK. Talk about getting specific. So, that's something else that's going on now that wasn't the last time. I've got the stay-at-home orders aren't lifted until next week for Toronto, Peel, and York. Is that right?
They're the week after.
The week after. Okay, so it's not.
Everybody else is on is the day after Family Day, including us.
Right. So there is a little bit of a delay there, but it's still going to happen. Davila in Toronto was talking about how we're pretty much at the point where we're transitioning from one pandemic to another, taking into account variants and taking into account all of that stuff that is going on. So
that's a good point. And let me push back on something you said, that it feels like we're going into, or it feels different this year. What kind of struck me is sort of like watching where the variants are turning up and watching it kind of like creep closer. Like the variant turned up, the UK one turned up in, I think it was, Waterloo region is what I'm thinking. It turned up like a couple of weeks ago. There was the first case of the Brazilian variant in Canada, in Toronto last weekend. It reminded me of sitting in, the library or down at the U of G, places where I go out to hang out in public and get work done so I'm not at home, back when you could do these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of this time last year, watching the COVID pop up in Toronto, pop up in Waterloo region, pop up in London, pop up here, pop up there. It's like watching it get closer to our region. And that's, I kind of have that feeling watching the variants again. This year it's like a new
rerun
or a remake
of sorts. Although there are already measures in place, which is great and something that we need to keep doing, and also eat more real egg sandwiches, it would seem. Yeah, holy cow. Anyway, so
that was so on brand for Doug Ford. I can't even take a moment in the press conference to plug Timmy's. That was such a Doug Ford moment. I can't even begin to describe.
It's not hard to spot when he's freewheeling, right? It was the same with Trump. Like when there's the notes, and then when the notes get thrown out, you know where that's. And nothing against the Tim Horton egg sandwich. Who cares? But that's it though, right? It's like, who cares? Go and get one of those. I can honestly say I haven't been to the. I was going to call it the UK bakery, but it's not. The Scottish bakery in Cambridge, just for my own personal, even if it was pickup, like outside pickup, because of my concerns about the UK/Kent variant. So everybody's got their line that they're drawing. And a lot of those lines need to be firm and still in place, even though, again, where you're wondering if it's people are hearing, oh, things are being lifted, and then they're just going to go back to stuff. They're going to go back to, we haven't seen a Super Bowl bump yet, but there, you know, there's still time, right? There's still time for these things to happen, even though everybody says, don't do this, stay home, watch the weekend and the football game with your people.
It's not even that, like, that severe. Like, you know, the Super Bowl, I mean, don't do it. Don't get together for even the Super Bowl. But I mean, even at that, it's like an occasion at which we typically get together with people for. There was that TikTok or whatever it was, the video from that Edmonton restaurant, Earl's, where there was like 10 people around a table, and they just reopened their restaurants and things this week, and you got 10 people around a table, no one's masked, clinking glasses, talking loudly.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of that, but I'm also thinking of this report I saw in an article I read on from Twitter today. Twitter delivered this article to me, as it were, but that apparently you can fit all the COVID molecules in the world into a Coke can. And you think about, like, all this misery from, like, something that could fit in a Coke can.
It's like the angels on the head of a pin approach, yeah. Right? It's like, yeah, how many? Yeah. It's just a virus. Don't worry. It's small. It's little. Yeah, so it's like asbestos, right? But it's, you know, you shouldn't worry about it. Oh, boy. Love those. It's like a Coke versus Pepsi comparison. I don't know. Scan the QR code and find out how many whatevers fit in this can. Oh, my God. Thankfully, in terms of, let's talk about some smaller numbers. One would be that we had a day this week locally where there was only one case. And I thought it was like anything. It'll be the next day. There'll be 400 because the reporting was wrong. But numbers are generally staying down. Also small in number was the protest in downtown Guelph that only had about I can't remember what the report was. It was like a dozen plus. So that's good. I think that's good. That is a nice low number that a lot of us, the majority of us, can live with. A good sign that the local anti-lockdown whining is being tamped down.
Well, I would also say, too, in terms of the numbers, if you look at the trends, I think we are now in orange. I haven't looked at today's numbers yet, but yesterday we were in orange in terms of the 7-day moving average of confirmed cases and the 7-day moving average of test positivity. Both of them were in the orange. So that's they've been in the red since, like, well before Christmas. So that's a positive sign. I mean, because numbers can change day to day, as you said. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be low today, it could be high tomorrow, or you could be like the city of Toronto constantly moving your data around and screwing up the provincial numbers. So the daily numbers can fluctuate wildly, but what you want to pay attention to is that weekly trend, and those trends are very positive.
Yeah, and something I keep hearing that gets sort of brushed aside when it comes down to, say, mass distancing and vaccines, which are the ones that get focused on all the time. The specialists, the people that know things, are the thing you kind of hear on repeat if you follow them is to consider the other tools, such as, well, isolating, of course, is one, but wider tracing or better contact tracing and also more widespread testing is what is required in addition to all the other things to keep this at bay. You don't really hear too much about that. Do you remember, let's go back a year almost, when there was a flurry of, oh, we've got this rapid test and it'll be out in no time. We still haven't seen it, and I'm not really sure why. Although they do exist, and I believe some places are using them, where you can get a rapid test, give you an idea in 10 minutes, and if it's like, well, we think you might be positive, go home. Well, is the kind of thing that needs to happen more. And right. Sounds like it would be simpler than just sort of filling out the "Do you have COVID? No, okay" form, which is also very common in a lot of places, right?
Well, there was an article on the CBC. I don't know if it was posted today or yesterday, but I didn't catch the date, but because I was too busy enthralled in this article. But there are apparently thousands of rapid case kits available. That have were procured by the federal government. The provinces, though, aren't using them because in Ontario, we have the highest rate of use of these rapid test kits at 18.47% of the number of kits that have been bought have been used. So we've used 18.47% of the kits we have available. Meanwhile, Alberta has used 0.89% of the rapid test kits available. And of course, this was another example of Jason Kenney, you know, going, well, we got to get these test kits or I'm going to, you know, if Ottawa's not going to do it, I'm going to go buy them from someone else. And then Ottawa did buy them and Jason Kenney hasn't been using them. Of course, you know, Doug Ford's been barely using them either, but at least, you know, he's handing it at least 1 out of 5, which is, you know, terrible, but better than less than 1 out of 100, like Jason Kenney. So
the LOL insists they're not trying to make political hay out of this, but people can't hear it, but I tend to lean back on this topic and take a deep sigh away from the microphone, and then I lean back in, because that's just how I myself and everyone, a lot of people, are feeling about this. It's when you hear idiotic stuff like that. But we will let this go for now, and of course, mm-hmm. we know COVID and all of that will be back on the show probably weekly. It's, I can't believe it's a year. I was saying this to Adam before the show via chat. It's like we're coming up on a year of this setup. So let's just hope that a year from now, we're all vaxxed up and ready to rock. But anyway, speaking of ready to rock, the parties provincially in Ontario looks like they're gearing up for an election as to when that election will be. It is supposed to be. What is the exact date of it again? And I know it's 2022, but is it October?
It'll be June 2022.
June. See, I'm a mile off. I don't know. I should have probably. I don't know. June, I mean, October.
I suppose theoretically they could call it at any time, but I think it's like it has to be June 2022, you know, with the. What is it? Exact election dates? What is that?
Permanent? Fixed election? Yeah. Fixed election dates. So there was an article in on TVO website that was talking about the NDP have done a bit of retooling. Sounds like they're trying to get on a war footing, moving some people around. I was picturing, has anybody used Queen's Park Gambit? Have we used that one? The Queen's Park Gambit, where you just like move people around in opposition who are critics and whatnot that are giving, well, giving it to the government, you know what I mean? The person that is will be teed up potentially if the NDP or whomever becomes the government, that they will slide in to that position. Mm-hmm. That's usually the opposition critic where they end up. It's like a cabinet shuffle, but not exactly. Now, interestingly, also on TVO, I should mention, there happened to be an article that came up that said, what the heck happened to the NDP? And I read it. And then I realized that the date was this exact date, February 11th, but a year ago. So there was a year-old article that sort of talked about what's been happening with the NDP, and I read it. And it, in my opinion, it could probably apply to today as well. This is not to say that there aren't NDP people and MPPs that are out there and being persistent and being on the media and doing their jobs as critic and being opposition, like what they're supposed to do. But there does seem to be this missing piece in their case where it's like, can they actually hit the bar? Because one poll that I saw, and I think it may have been linked to from TVO that went to 338, that said that actually has the NDP in third if there was an election tomorrow. Now, poll schmoles, we know this. But it has them in third place, right? And it's like, so what is it? Why can't they kick it up? I mean, a lot of it is probably to do with the pandemic, but what am I missing? What am I missing here, Adam? And what are they missing too, I suppose? I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think we might have even talked about it on the show, that article this time last year. And I know that there has been a lot of gruntlement, not necessarily from people who are in the NDP camp, but I mean just people generally, because this time last year there was a lot of anger at the Ford government, whether that was for some of the stuff they were pulling with public health authorities, canceling some funding there, talk about amalgamating the public health authorities, really dodged a bullet, considering that happened right before a pandemic. So they were able to, the pandemic happened before they were able to enact that stuff, whether we're talking about municipal funding, whether we're talking about student choice. And people felt like really, you know, there wasn't really a strong opposition response. And I think, you know, I think that has extended because of the pandemic. And there's a definite attitude of, you know, we want to go along to get along. We want to help out. We want to all come together and overcome this great, tremendous societal challenge. So you can't go too hard. But at the same time, there is still I mean, we're at a point now in the pandemic where we do have sort of widespread disgruntlement about the government response. And it's hard. I mean, egg salad sandwich, you know, commentary aside,
real egg.
it's, you know, I believe I've, you know, said something along these lines before on the show. You know, it's tough to go after Doug Ford because he's been not the best of both worlds, not the worst of both worlds either. He has acknowledged that we have a pandemic. We have to respond. He's turfed people who have gone, you know, full anti-mask and full, you know, pandemic skepticism, people like Randy Hillier. Mm-hmm. So it's he has not been the worst he could possibly be. On the other hand, it still feels like we're going by, you know, a lick and a prayer. And I think going along with that, the opposition response has been that way too. Instead of laying out, you know, and maybe this speaks to why I'm not a member of the NDP, but just laying out a total response. Like if I were Andrew Horvath, I'd be saying, like, here is my counter plan. Here's what we should be doing instead of, you know, responding to every half-assed announcement from the government. Mm-hmm. and kind of sniping at it that way. And I'll just say too that if Andrea Horvath was going to break through, 2018 was going to be the time.
Yeah.
Because you had Doug Ford. He was new to the provincial scene. A lot of people still had long memories about the stuff that went down while he was a city councilor, when his brother was mayor. The PCs were in disarray because, you know, they had Michael Harris bowing out of the race because of some allegations, Patrick Brown bowing out because of some allegations. It was a complete and total cluster F. And if the NDP was ever going to be able to press the advantage, that would be the time, and they still couldn't press the advantage, and it's going to be that much harder, especially since, you know, they're ranking third in these polls. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have anything in particular against Stephen Del Duca, and I actually hopped on to this media availability he was doing this morning.
Uh-huh.
Ahead of the legislature, and it was mostly like, yeah, you know what? I don't hear a lot about Stephen Del Duca, and since we're talking about this today, I'll hop on and see what's going on. It's just like he's almost a complete non-presence. Like, Mike has a bigger footprint. Our MPP, Mike Schreiner, has a bigger footprint at Queen's Park mm-hmm. than Stephen Del Duca does. It might be because Stephen Del Duca doesn't have a seat. But, I mean, if you're getting your butt kicked by the invisible man, it's, you know, you got to wonder about your election chances. And, well, maybe that's why she's sort of shaking up the front benches too.
Well, and that is the thing. It's very difficult right now to get traction. And to be fair, I do see NDP people on the news because, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way it works. They'll turn to the government does what they do daily, getting lost. They're all, you see their faces all the time. Then they will turn to certain people and say, well, what do you think about this? Right. So it's not as if they're completely absent, but the classic things that give political things traction, such as having a regular question period that isn't a mostly a Zoom meeting, right? Having to be able to stand at the podium at Queen's Park and behind with the flags behind you and give the spiel rather than just being in your living room talking about what's going on, right? So that all of those elements are missing. So what is needed? You need to not just embrace those elements, but try all of the other things. You know, those things the kids like Instagram, right? right?
I'm not even sure that's it, though. I mean,
that's not the only thing, but it's definitely a part of it that you know, traction needs to be created in other ways this time around. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I'm fair enough, but I'm not even sure that's the case because Aaron O'Toole seems to be doing fine. Looking at the federal scene, like Aaron O'Toole, I you know, you're not going to see Aaron O'Toole on a TikTok anytime soon. But it's he seems might look to like be a cat. I don't know. that might actually help him, but you know, he's not really reaching out to any new audiences, and maybe that's because there's already kind of a built-in advantage there, because there, you know, there are people who will be diehard conservative no matter what, and I guess maybe the same is for the liberals. There will be people who are diehard liberal no matter what. I mean, she already is from a disadvantage, Andrea Horvath, I guess. But it just seems like, you know, the pandemic hasn't been an impediment to Erin O'Toole. And I would also say the same thing of Jagmeet Singh, mm-hmm. who's even in a trickier position federally than Erin O'Toole. It's like he doesn't have any problem getting attention. But I don't know what it is about Andrea Horvath that is, you know, she's the official opposition leader. We should see her face everywhere.
And yeah, and some of it too is that Canadians, whether provincially or federally, tend to set to the defaults, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when it's a Liberal government, it's a Conservative government in waiting, and vice versa, right? So right now it's Conservative government provincially. The default, with one exception in all of Ontario's history, although... Yeah, not to get too deep into it, but generally these days, Liberal, Conservative, right? So what, you know, where is the space for the third party or even the fourth party like the Greens? As you say, Mike is pretty much everywhere, including here on quite a few occasions, which is a very Guelph thing and what you need to do. But this may be a wait and see kind of thing. We're going to wait and see what Steve Paikin has to say 6 months from now about this. No, probably not. But not to diss TVO. I love them. And I think they do a really good job of presenting politics regularly, like we like to do or try to do anyway. So I guess that's probably segue-ish enough, eh, Adam, into...
Well, yeah.
The next thing, unless you had one more thing to add on all of this.
I was just going to say Steve Paikin's also a very tall man in real life. It's so. I mean, he's got big shoes to fill, no matter what.
It doesn't seem so on Zoom when he's in his little garret up wherever he is. But
yeah,
hopefully we'll be garret free soon. We don't know, but yeah. And as everyone knows, when the election does come, we will be here.
Mm-hmm.
We will be mm-hmm. here on CFRU 93.3 FM. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph. We're heard here every Thursday at 5 p.m. We're going to take a little bit of a breather now, play some music, have some announcements, and then we will come back fully refreshed for round two. So please stick around. We'll be right back. Wow, I feel that's one for our funky, funky blues doctor. But that was the Supremes with the Temptations on a collaboration album called Together. That's our Royal Cat Records pick of the week. Royal Cat Records, the little big record shop at 21 Mac Donnell downtown. And that song was, as we know, that song was The Wait. And according to this album, it says it was written by Jamie Robertson. I think Robbie Robertson might be surprised at that. But there you go. So it's like Supremes, Temptations, the band. Absolutely out of control. So not unlike our lives in the pandemic, I suppose. Right, Adam?
I'm still not a cat.
He's like, he's still not a cat man. That's okay. You just hear Sammy Davis's voice in my head. Like, he's not a cat man. It's crazy. Oh, Sammy. Yeah, I think I'm going to dial up some Sammy for the next week or two, but not the Candyman. But anyway, I should probably just do a music show. Not a music show at all. Is the Trump impeachment proceedings in Washington going on right now? Probably as we speak. In addition to, it's just been going on. Oh, there's a live feed. I saw the PBS one, and it is the, I guess it would be the prosecution if we were looking at it as a classic Law and Order setup. The SNL had a pretty good gag referring to Trump as the former social media personality, Donald Trump, and he used social media to his detriment in a lot of ways. It may have been part of his inciting insurrection, which is the charge that is being laid against him and being discussed in the Senate. So they need to decide as to whether, and part of the impeachment is to need to decide as to whether Donald Trump actually rallied the troops and called them to come to the Capitol and invade the Capitol and want to kill people like Nancy Pelosi, Mike Pence, who is on the same team, AOC, and all of that. So the burning question, did he do it? And because we don't live in the States, we can speculate as much as we want, by the way. So we can just say whatever, pretty much.
If you were paying attention to the case of the House managers, and I think if you were looking at it objectively, you would have to say, yeah, he did it, and he did it willfully and with the reckless abandon. And when it did happen, he did nothing to try and stop it. I mean, the prosecution case, if we're to use the normal supplique for these things, has been devastating. Yeah. And I will say, so confident is the case and the prosecutors that they actually adjourned. They finished their arguments about an hour ago.
Oh, it's wrapped up.
Yeah. So
the defense still has to come, right?
So. Yes, the defense goes tomorrow, and they are not expected to take their entire 16 hours. And if you need sort of a primer on maybe where their mind is at, I would refer you to Tuesday when one of the two Trump lawyers got up and basically pulled a Lionel Hutz and was like, wow. That was a great opening. That really devastated our own case. And I mean, they didn't actually say that, but they might as well have, because they had to change things up on the fly, just because, I mean, it was devastating. From the opening video where they put together side by side the sort of TikTok of Trump's speech and the various tweets against, you know, the real-time video footage of people breaking into the Capitol. And then there was stuff that was shown yesterday where video and information that we didn't know before, like just how quickly or how close, like within seconds, Mike Pence came to encountering the mob, how there was footage of like Chuck Schumer, the majority leader, now the majority leader, being led away by his security, and then them like doubling back and running in the opposite direction. There was footage of Mitt Romney, notable for being the only Republican to vote to impeach last time, where he's walking one way and Officer Eugene Goodman, widely hailed as sort of one of the preeminent heroes of the day, for leading protesters, using himself to lead protesters away from the Senate chamber,
like bait.
Waving Mitt Romney off from going towards the protesters. So Mitt Romney owes Eugene Goodman a favor or two after that acknowledgement. So it's just like, If you're just watching this footage and watching the way they're laying it out, and it really, I mean, I was ready to impeach Trump before, but I mean, seeing it all lined up by the House managers, it was, I mean, if you know, putting on a legal case is like theatrics, this was like a top of the line opening night Stratford production.
Oh, yeah. And it sounds like Trump's not very happy with his legal team. But, of course, we don't know too much because he's not on Twitter anymore. Former social media personality. But when he was a social media personality, and the argument being made is that it wasn't just a one-time thing. He didn't – the line was like, we're going to march on Pennsylvania Avenue. And I love Pennsylvania Avenue, you know, in Trump style, and fight like hell. I think the arguments they're trying to make that this fight – request was not metaphoric, but in the sense of the political sense, like a political fight. And then, of course, there was Giuliani. I don't know what's going to happen with him. He was the one that said trial by combat. Is that something from Game of Thrones? I've heard it referred to as the Game of Thrones line. So trust Giuliani to be able to come up with something original in his life. But
just people who aren't Game of Thrones fans knows this. Yes, in season 4, the Peter Dinklage character is accused of killing the king, and it looks like he's been set up to go down for killing the king. So he demands trial by combat, which also goes badly. So
I guess what Giuliani does in his spare time. Other than go after Borat's daughter. But yes. Well, it's true, though. It's all true. So what might save Trump? Well, there's a few things. One is that the odds are really good that all the Republicans in the House and the Senate is split 50-50 there. It was only 56 members, which is all of the Democrats plus 6 Republicans, said, let's have this impeachment trial. So now all this is getting read into the record. To impeach, they need a supermajority of 2/3, which is 67 votes. Unlikely to happen. I think the defense is probably going to go into that, just keep saying First Amendment, First Amendment, First Amendment. Because at one point, Trump also said at that same rallying of the troops that, we want you, and I think this is him reading from the prompter rather than going freewheeling. We want you to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard, right? So that's the disclaimer will be, well, he said that, so he didn't really mean the other thing he said, which is Trump's entire presidential career in a nutshell. I never said that. I said that you're fake news, right? We are seeing right. This is Trumpism at its, I wouldn't even say it's finest, but classic Trumpism in terms of like, well, I didn't actually say that. What I actually said was blah, blah, blah. So that's probably the two things. I said three. What is the third? I don't even know. that's will lead to him not being impeached, right? So, there doesn't seem, the appetite isn't there to... The argument from Republicans is like, well, why would you want to impeach a non-sitting president? I think it's because he can't sit again. I don't know whether this guy's going to last 4 years. He could get COVID again. His junk food life and however he lives his life may catch up with him. I don't know. And all that is probably irrelevant. I don't know if he's going to be in the shape in 4 years to run for president. But this is one of the things that they want to prevent. But also punish him. Because no one has really, like, I guess they're punishing the individual people that have invaded the Capitol, but in terms of political punishment, it hasn't really happened. And in some ways, as we're seeing with the QAnon people elected, etc., it's not gone. It isn't over. Even when this impeachment trial is over, that the whiff of all of that, the whiff of it is all still there.
I mean, by and large, this is the fault of the Republican Party, who could have at any point. And I know that to your analysis, that is essentially correct. But the idea, I think, is to keep pushing the Republican Party, whether that is successful today or next week or if they vote to impeach or whatever it is. The point is to keep pushing the Republican Party, and if not reaching the sitting senators, many of whom off the record who will admit that this is devastating and there needs to be something to happen, but on the record are too scared of the Trump base to go against it. The idea is to, I think, make this more and more acceptable in the greater body politic of American politics. I mean, ultimately, Donald Trump, I don't want to say Donald Trump is irrelevant because he's very, very irrelevant, but Ted Lieu, who is one of the impeachment managers, said it's not, he said, and I'm this isn't a verbatim, a direct quote, but it is verbatim. He said, I am not scared of Donald Trump running in 4 years. I am scared of Donald Trump running in 4 years and losing and going through this again.
Good point.
This is the thing, is that for Republicans going forward, every Republican made a deal at some point. It's like, well, let's, Trump is rough around the edges. Yeah, he says crude things. Yeah, he might have raped some women, so on and so forth. But I will put up with him to get conservative judges or get his support to run for re-election or tax cuts for the rich or whatever it is, whatever your bag is. The thing is, In a cult, and this is definitely a cult now.
Oh, yeah. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm.
In a cult, everybody reaches a point where they can't take it anymore. And we're seeing some of them reach their point. People like Liz Cheney, people like Adam Kinzinger. We've seen people reach their point before this. People like Rick Wilson or people like Steve Schmidt, who's now a Democrat. The question is, when we get to Jonestown, and this may be the Jonestown moment.
It is, yeah.
When we get to Jonestown, how many people are going to drink the Kool-Aid? And how many people are going to be held by the guards as they have the Kool-Aid pour down their throats? Because that's what happened at Jonestown. 900 people were killed there. Not all 900 people drank the Kool-Aid willingly. Some of them were shot because they refused and they tried to get away. Some of them were held and had the Kool-Aid poured down them. Some of them did drink it willingly. But how many of them? I mean, the point is, they all die. They're all dead. That was, 900 people lived there, and then they were one day they were alive, and one day they were dead. And that's where the Republican Party is right now, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so we'll see. It's accepted that the troops loyal to Trump were the ones that, like you say, the cult, the flags, the hats, the attitude. Were they following orders? It really, really looks that way. I'm sure business is down quite a bit in terms of his swag, but if the battle troops are carrying the colors, then you can bet they were the cult arms. Was from him indeed, like using the Jonestown comparison, right?
Yeah. Well, it's so hard to even wear a red hat now. I mean, if somebody's wearing like a St. Louis Cardinals hat,
I have a Yankees hat that's red that I really like, and I just brought it back from New York, and I was like, I can't wear this.
Yeah, if you see a red hat from 50 yards away, you're oddly thinking, what is that MAGA fool doing wearing that hat? But it's
Trump, you've ruined red hats. I think you can get away with like a watch cap, but even that is like.
Well, a watch cap is one thing, but I mean, the red MAGA, I mean,
a red baseball hat is just done. Yeah.
It's a no non-starter.
Yeah.
That color cap has been eliminated. Like, you won't be able to wear a red cap safely for the next 100 years.
What's the fashion turnover? It's something like 20 years. So unless there's a big Trump's ghost revival in 20 years. Oh, I don't know.
People will be wearing MAGA hats, ironically.
Oh, yeah, that's right. A Value Village or whatever's left after all this. There'll be hundreds of them. Oh, no, there'll be at least three in Guelph, that's for sure. But it'll be easy to come by. You can probably take the embroidery out and put something nice on there. Wow, that's one to grow on. Finally, we're going to talk a bit about the farmer strike in India, which, as I said off the top, is one of the largest. I didn't realize that the strike in November, there was a general strike in support of the farmers and the changes going on with farming or attempted changes in India. 250 million people went out in solidarity with the farmers of the north of India. This is a long-ish and complicated story, but the short version is that the Modi government in India is trying to make changes to the way agriculture works in particular places. They're looking for a more green revolution style farming, whereas a lot of the farmers in particular places, in Bengal, among others, farm in a more classic style where there's many, many, many small farms, hundreds, thousands of farms, who are afraid of corporate control and of private companies taking over. There is also a wrinkle, I guess we'll say, been added into the story that it has, even though it isn't completely, it has been sectarian lines have been drawn. The Modi government is predominantly Hindu. A lot of the farmers from Bengal and other areas are Sikh, as you can see in the protests both there and in Canada. And in drawing that sectarian line is an attempt to, let's say, stir it up a bit. In a way that it probably wasn't going to go there. Officially, India's government is non-sectarian, officially. Mm. And Modi will say this when given the chance, as all politicians, he will just say, well, we will follow this. We will follow the Constitution. We will do this. But behind the scenes, it's a little bit different, where you can kind of declare people of a certain bias, even imply in places that they are Khalistani separatists, aka terrorists. Really good bit on this on Canada Land, which is on this station, but a very worthwhile podcast worth checking out if you're wondering about the mechanics of why the heck are the farmers angry in India. And this is massive, absolutely massive.
And it's complicated too, mm-hmm. because we're talking about like farming policy established in the 60s, and it's kind of worked that way ever since. And it really gets into a lot of different farming issues. And one of the biggest ones is that this is a system that was kind of set up at a time when there was a lot of famine in India. It helped create a lot of incredible wealth in India and in farmers and in terms of production. And the unfortunate part is that agriculture has gone down in value in India the last several decades. It used to be 50% of the GDP. Now it's 15%. Mm. At the same time, though, half the Indian economy works in agricultural in some capacity. So their wages have been stagnant. If you're lucky, wages have been stagnant. For the unlucky, the wages are going down. Half of India's farm families are in debt. It's a very dire economic picture. And this is kind of where a familiar Western politics kind of come into play, because what does Modi do? He says, oh, I know what we should do. Deregulate. Mm-hmm. We're going to deregulate, and it's going to make it like so much wicked easier for you guys to like do business and make more money and things. And the farmers are, and people who work in agriculture, especially as you said, the small like kind of family farmers, generational farmers, are can like kind of see through the BS and go, oh, let me get this straight. You're going to deregulate the market that sets, you know, the competitive price of certain commodities, mm-hmm. and you know, make sure that we can make money off of these and that we're not ground underfoot by big corporations and big private buyers who can make deals on the side. It's all kind of public. There's oversight. So you are going to dismantle that, and we're going to make more money. We're not going to be pushed out or bought out or forced out. That seems kind of suspicious. And of course, this is what happens when people feel like they're under threat. You shut down the five major highways into one of the major cities in Eastern Asia. So mm-hmm. it doesn't come as a terribly, I mean, people hate change generally, but I think people in India are especially susceptible to concerns when people start talking. Again, a lot of that is the sectarian nature of the situation. A lot of these farmers are Sikh. They see Modi and they're thinking, well, how is he trying to screw us today? Just because,
yeah, and
he's Hindu and it's a thing. And especially pronounced now, because it does feel like they're going to get screwed, and it does feel like a situation like, well, how can they not get screwed?
Yeah, I thought the Canadian equivalent is kind of, this is a different scale and place, obviously, but is the demolition of the Canadian wheat board, mm-hmm. is similar in that, dude, they had this body in place for many, many years, many decades, that was just sort of pulled out from under, and it's like, oh, this will be better, and for farmers and grains, it really wasn't. This whole kind of opening up the market thing. When you have smaller farms and that need those supports, the main concern is that the prices are going to drop. Supposedly, it happened in a different province, Bihar province, I believe it is, where they tinkered with this, dismantled marketing boards and sales center, and right away prices dropped. In India, in 2019, 10,000 farmers and farm laborers committed suicide. Now, mind mm-hmm. you, they have a billion plus people. Scale-wise, like Ontario has about, I'm going to say 50,000 farms, I think. People don't know this. I was an agricultural student, so I still kind of follow these. still sort of keep following these things. So scale-wise, I mean, that's incredible. And also in the protest camps that have been set up, which have been, you know, they've been batoned, they've been sprayed, roadblocks set up, internet shut off. I mean, as we've seen in Malaysia and other places, Hong Kong, when they start tinkering with the internet, it's like they do not want you to communicate, right? So when that starts happening, you know that there's a problem. Supposedly there are talks going on. There's like 40 farm unions involved in mm-hmm. talks with the government. I believe the government has said that they're going to table this and postpone it for, I think it's 18 months, which is just sort of punting it down the road. I don't know when their next election is, but the Indian election is a thing to behold when it does happen. But I think we talked about that before, how incredible the Indian election is when it occurs. It is a masterpiece of like...
We talked about it when Modi was running for re-election.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, at the end of 2019.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when he is due up next, but this, in the meantime, this all goes on. And as I had mentioned about a little bit about the... we'll call them the solidarity protests in Canada. There has been some political hay made of this. I had forgotten that Jagmeet Singh, it would seem that there are political people in India that don't like the number of Sikh MPs that there are, regardless of party, in Ottawa. There are quite a few with the Liberal Party. There are some of the Conservative Party, but particularly Jagmeet Singh is banned from traveling to India because of his opinions about what's going on in India as part of the diaspora, right? Mm-hmm. So Modi and Trudeau were talking vaccines. I think that may have even been this morning. And Modi referred to Trudeau as his friend, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, especially when you're talking about vaccines, which is something we really need. And India is one of the places that produces a lot of them for the world. That's good in some ways, but then you have this other simmering issue which could blow up, I guess, at any time, along the lines of the Michaels in China, right? Like, is it going to go that way? We don't know. But
Trudeau said he supported the right for anyone in the world for peaceful protest. And Modi was basically like, mind your own business. So it's,
yeah.
he can stick his head out a little. But I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's about as much as Trudeau is going to do on any situation internationally. It's like, well, we support the peaceful right, the right of peaceful protest. And
yeah, and realistically, what else can you say?
Well,
but I guess if the solidarity protests in Canada are getting traction in India, which they are no doubt are via the internet, which has been shut down by the government, I don't know if that was just a temporary measure or whatever, then of course they're not going to like it, right? But this, as I said before, the scale, I didn't even realize the scale of this. I mean, it was big, but that is massive. So this probably is another story that is going to be on the burners for a while. Will it fizzle, or will it become something much larger than just a farmers' protest? It's entirely possible. It is when you can have a general strike with 250 million people out. That's like almost a quarter of their country.
Right, and I mean, it's one of these things. It's so big. It even though it's internal Indian politics, we get sucked into it here because there's 1.3 million people of Indian descent living here, and they all have an eye back home too. So it's a political issue that, even though it doesn't necessarily affect us here, it has a certain gravitational pull, which is why we wanted to cover it.
And we will continue to do that here on Open Sources Guelph. I'm afraid we're out of time for today. We're heard every Thursday at 5 p.m. here on CFRU 93.3 FM. Adam A. Donaldson, if people want to find out more about you and what you do, how can they do that?
Well, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can also go to my website, Guelph Politico, at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. Please check out the CFRU website for our scheduling and times and all that fun stuff at cfru.ca. And Open Sources Guelph is also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Play, and in the archive at cfru.ca. It is literally everywhere. If you can't hear us, there's something wrong. But anyway, on that note, we better go back to our sweep out the bunker, go after the spiders. Thank you so much for listening and joining us this week. And please join us next week, same time. or find us in all those places that I was talking about. Take care. Thank you.